to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Dan Roth. I'm joined this week by ex-Autoblog star writer. You like that introduction? Yes. Jeff Glucker from Hooniverse.com.
And what's up?
Sorry, didn't mean to step on your intro.
Oh, I didn't know if I had an intro.
I was going with it. You know,
sorry.
We'll be a little loose and sloppy because that's what we do.
That's how Dan likes it.
And there's Jeff Ross. How's it going, Jeff?
Good.
The Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components. And those items make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter where your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. So, we'll talk about vehicles since you are the guest
sponsor.
Yeah, we do, man. We're trying to be legit. How's it working? Do we sound legit? You guys... we'll get to it.
That was a good read.
But Hooniverse, man, like you guys, I mean, you talk to Bob Lutz and stuff.
Yeah. So, there's actually a second one because I co-host our podcast with Blake Zerong from Auto Week, and he interviewed Bob Lutz. And then right after he interviewed him, I interviewed him. So I think Blake spoke about it on an episode of the podcast. I was there, and then I'm going to upload my interview. So we're double dipping on the Lutz
nice.
Daily.
You guys both have man crushes on him?
I mean, how can you not? I don't have as strong a one as Blake, just because I actually believe in global warming. I don't think it's a crock of... Are we allowed to swear on this?
Yeah,
I don't think
no,
it's a crock
it's
of S. Okay.
It's a crock of fertilizer.
Right, there you go. I asked first. That
yes,
was good.
That's good. Keep asking. all right, so in terms of global warming, what are you driving this week to do your part to put CO2 in the atmosphere?
You we're friends on Facebook, so you actually, I don't know if I posted what I'm driving this week. I just gave back an Aston Martin Rapide S.
Oh, you suck.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, no, what do you say about a car like that? Like,
well, honestly, there are things to say because it I think the upfront facelift is nice. The front end's a little slightly more aggressive. The car looks great. You know, they didn't need to change much else besides like a integrated spoiler in the back. And then the engine has more power, but the infotainment section is just absolute garbage.
Isn't that the way it is with all the, I mean, Jeff, you've had to deal, I'm sure, with like the occasional Range Rover and Jaguar. Don't you wind up wanting to punch it after a while in any of those high-end cars?
Thankfully the Vanquish fixes the issues in the Rapide. So I'm hoping that makes its way down to, I mean, I assume it has to, because it's just such a sore spot for the car. But yeah, I was driving a Jaguar one time, or no, I'm sorry. I was driving a Range Rover, the last gen car, down the highway. And all of a sudden the audio just shut off. I'm bumping down the highway, enjoying the beautiful sound system, and it just shuts off. The only way I could get it to turn back on is when I pulled over at a gas station, turned the car off, turned the car on. It's like resetting a computer. It was insane.
Well, the worst part about the Aston Martins with the flimsy pop-up screen, it was Volvo, like straight out of a Volvo.
Yeah.
It was very safe.
They still have the screen, but everything else is nicer. Like the displays on the screen are a little bit more bespoke to the car. The way the buttons work is crisp and makes sense. So thankfully on the Vanquish, if you're in the market, you know, for $300,000 baby blue Grand Tour.
I don't always buy cars as expensive as houses, but when I do, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I did also just have the Mulsanne, which is more expensive than the Rapide.
Have you been driving anything that's not expensive in British?
I just drove the new Forte Turbo.
Ooh. Okay. That's something that we may actually hope to be able to afford. What did you think?
And I noticed that one of the questions someone was asking about on the Autoblog question section for this podcast was about the Forte 5, and that's the one I drove. And it's pretty sweet. I mean, it's a 1.6 liter turbo that makes 200 horsepower and in a simple car with decent options and good seats. And I mean, the steering isn't anything to write home about because it's a Hyundai Kia product, and that's almost unfortunately their calling card. But the rest of the car is pretty darn good.
Yeah, I think we've all driven the Forte, have we not, in some form?
I've driven the new one.
Oh. The new one is
they had them at SEMA. that's why I was at SEMA, was to drive. I spent one day away from the show floor driving the new Forte Turbos.
Hmm.
It's like a good-looking Veloster Turbo, huh? Better looking anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
I think the Veloster Turbo has more horsepower though, right? That's got the 270 something.
No.
The Veloster's
like 206 or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, then it is the same engine. I really like the Forte. I had a Forte a while ago and I liked it a lot.
It's a good little car.
Sedan.
Yeah. And you know, for the price, I'm guessing that the Forte Turbo or the Forte 5 Turbo is what, about 27?
I think they said if you maxed it out, it's like 25.
That's a pretty good deal.
Because it's not the sedan, it's the coupe and the hatch. And yeah, I mean, it's a great deal. It's not, I've always been a little bit bored with Hyundai Kia steering feel.
Steering feel?
Well, okay, exactly. the lack of it. Like even the Genesis Coupe is a fun car, but it could be so much better. So everything about Hyundai Kia at this point has moved to a spot where almost everything in their lineup is you kind of go, that's pretty good, or that's good, or sometimes occasionally that's really good. But the one comment I personally always come back with is, man, there is just the steering is not right on these cars.
Yeah, that's kind of like me with my suspension tuning comment about their stuff too, but they figured that out right quick. So maybe the next time there's a new Forte, we'll be talking about how great the steering is and how like delicately you can clip an apex and stuff.
I hope so.
Yeah, I'm not hopeful for that. We'll be talking about the CVT instead.
Oof.
Because that's the way things go. So,
Speaking of gearboxes, though, even the gearbox in the Forte 5 Turbo was pretty sweet.
Oh, it was a manual?
A manual gearbox, yeah. And if you opt for a Forte or Coupe Turbo or Forte 5, which is the hatch turbo, with the manual, you can still get the premium and technology packages.
Oh, so they don't punish you to shift for yourself.
Yep. Yes, which was one of the few good questions at the Q&A.
So is that the question you asked?
No, somebody else said. I keep my mouth shut and I wait to talk to the engineers.
Really? You know, like you're not like the bald-headed dude who's like been vacuuming up the buffet for a half hour in the front who like raises his hand and goes, will there be a wagon and will it be diesel powered?
No, right. Even worse are the questions that could be easily answered if you just read the materials.
Yep. Yeah, I love those.
What's the horsepower?
Worst one ever, though, is when it's something they said two slides ago.
Yeah.
I hate that so much. Oh,
sorry, I was checking my texts on this phone here. I don't know how to tweet.
Yeah. All right. What's the hashtag? What is a hashtag?
That's a number sign.
We're getting all very inside baseball. Well, let's just say there's a generational divide among auto writers. Yeah. And we'll leave it at that. So Jeff, Glucker, mm-hmm. I mean Ross, I'm confused now.
You can't even get it right if you
I can't. I'm so confused and I'm caffeinated as hell right now. So what are you driving in Florida, Jeff?
I'm driving the Lexus GX 460. I was gonna come up with a funny way to make fun of its grill, but I just said what it was.
Oh, that's right, they gave it that like insect grill. They
the
call it
giant, but it makes the Lexus IS grill look normal.
Oh, did it get a spindle
down. Yes. Yeah. It's a giant spindle.
It's more like a what would a big spindle be like? A I don't know. It seems like spindle would denote something that's not very hefty, but the grill on the GX is large. It's just like a big representation of their spindle grill theme that doesn't look very good.
Spindle America Edition.
Merca.
Yeah.
Not America, Merca.
So I got to say, you know what? I'm glad you brought up Lexus because I've been trying to preach this for a little bit. With the exception of your sad description of the GX, almost all of the sedans in the lineup right now are kind of fun to drive.
They're all awesome, and we'll get to that. But the GX I really dislike the RX, and I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
Well, I think the RX is like the Camry of luxury crossovers, but the GX, it's actually not horrible. I mean, it's in this segment of like the Escalade and the ML from Mercedes. So you get these like over the top vehicles anyway. And it's like straight out of the early 2000s, like body on frame, no power.
Oh. No, well, it's got the this is the GX 460, so it's got the 4.6 liter V8, which sounds
301 horsepower.
Right, so it's V6
power. You can get that out of a four cylinder these days.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I really found like the thing that impressed me the most about the GX the last time I drove one was like it just feels so solid. It's so nicely appointed inside, and it's like quiet and comfortable. It is everything you want a luxury body on frame SUV to be. Is that still the case?
Yeah, it's weird. It's got this like it can go anywhere. I mean, the Land Rover or the Land Cruiser Prado, I think it's called, in Europe, it's the official vehicle of the United Nations, I feel like. And here it's like it's for like wealthy suburbanites, so it could go in a lot of places that most people will never take it.
Like,
you
know,
that's
suburbs.
Most off-road vehicles, like Range Rovers. But it's, at the same time, you can take, like, to get my daughter to daycare, there's like a series of speed bumps I have to go over. And I don't have to slow down in this. Like, it just takes them so, it just takes them so smooth. I was surprised.
Quap. Like, eh, whatever. It's a rental.
That's a rental car in Costa Rica, by the way. Land Cruiser Prado. I recently got to visit Costa Rica, and that is absolutely, it's a sweet rental car. It's exactly what you want down there. But now I'm glad you mentioned this because I've never driven a GX, and now I'm going to schedule one and purposely take it off road just to see what it does.
It will tear it up off road. It's got a real four wheel drive system with a locking transfer case and a low range, I believe. I mean, it's pretty legit in terms
because
of
the bigger one, the LX, is not Land Cruiser based, right? Or am I wrong?
No, you're wrong.
Okay. See, I thought there was like underpinnings on it that were like made it kind of wussy compared to the Land Cruiser. Or maybe I'm getting that wrong.
I think we're just gonna sit back and watch you go around in circles for a little while.
Right.
I love indecision. I do it myself.
I took this out on the beach, and there's like really loose sand, and there's been some big trucks that have gotten me scared by how close I come to getting sunk. And this has a locking center differential, like little toggle switches for four-wheel drive, and it powered through there from a dead stop. It was really impressive how well it handled.
Yeah, and it's like it's doing that as you're in those seats. I love every time there's a Lexus press release, they talk about their semi-aniline leather, and it's just like every time I have to stop and be like, okay, all right, I get it. And I guess all it really means is that like the leather has dye all the way through it. Aniline leather will have dye all the way through it versus like other cheaper leathers that only have the dye on the surface, so when they perforate it you see like the normal whatever. So it's just, that's all I think of when I think of Lexus seats, that and comfy. And that's, you know, it's a good place to be, the GX. You're not going to get to experience snow in it though, and I feel like you're missing out, so you should come north with it.
It is snowing up there.
It's getting there. Yeah, we actually had a dusting of snow this morning on the vehicles. Oof.
That sounds terrible.
It's wonderful. Like, okay, first of all, the leaves fell, and it was pretty, and now there's Christmas music on the radio.
God.
Seriously, you're B101 out of Providence.
I'll be back there for Christmas.
Yeah, so. I'm telling you, B101 is declaring themselves the official Southern New England's official Christmas station. This is very inside, very, very meta here. I'm sorry. But when you're back, yeah, because you're close to Providence when you're back, right? Like,
I'm kind of all over because I have family in New Hampshire, Boston, and then Southern Rhode Island and Connecticut, and we hit them all.
Yeah, I want them to come to me. That's why I need a house with a moat. But yes, see, now that it's in the Christmassy season, this is a fantastic vehicle to have in in the winter. I felt like the king the last time I had a GX because it was in the winter and it was pretty awesome. And that's my story. This week I've been driving the Nissan Juke, and
I love that thing.
Yeah, you know, there are people who don't like the Juke.
Sure.
Those people are idiots.
Which one do you have?
I had the SL all-wheel
driver. Yeah. Front.
No, all
the. So you don't even have the good one. The good one's the front-wheel drive one.
Why is the good one the front?
Because you get it with the manual.
I've heard the manual isn't really that good. I've never had a manual Juke.
All it's still a manual.
It's not great.
Yeah, but it's better than the CVT.
I would argue not.
Yeah, see, that's what I hear. Okay. The CVT is entertaining because it feels like you're driving like a Dyson vacuum, because you just put it. It's got those cool switches where you hit either climate when you hit D mode, it flips the center console thing to you can select between eco, which I don't know why anybody would do, normal and sport, and you put it in sport and it just has a super aggressive throttle response, and the little boost indicator, just anytime you touch the pedal it just wraps all the way around.
See, the deal with the manual one is you basically drive it as if it was an old Honda with VTEC, so you just rev the heck out of it and just take every corner like you're Ken Block, and you know, even grab some e-brake if you feel like it. And I even recently had the Nismo version, and it was just fantastic.
Yeah. This is the thing with the Juke, and I forget the last time, Jeff Ross, you had one. Did you like it or did you hate it? I forget.
I've always liked the Juke.
Okay.
I thought the Nismo was a little over the top.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is.
I think the whole Juke idea is over the top.
Yeah. And I really like ugly cars. So, I mean, it helps. That's part of the reason why I like the Juke.
Yeah. I'm driving this and I'm like, why would you buy a Mini? Because this is pretty much as entertaining as a Mini. And it's not as expensive.
Yeah.
Shall we say?
Yeah. I mean, have you ever played you can almost play the Porsche game with the Mini, and by that I mean you go online and you price it out and just see how absurd you can make the car. You can start with a car that starts at about 25,000 and end up with something that's walking out the door at about 42.
That's a lot of money for not a lot of car.
Exactly.
And I feel like the Juke is the other way around. The Juke is a lot of fun for not a lot of money. No matter how I drove it, I couldn't get less than 26 miles per gallon indicated, which was interesting to me because I was not gentle to this thing. You just wind it up, right? And then you just start slicing through traffic, and it's one of those little cars that makes you when you get behind the wheel of it, you just turn into this complete barbarian. It's a really strange thing, or maybe it's just me. I don't know.
No, if I bought one of those and I would actually put my money where my mouth is and buy one of those too. If I was in the market, I would like lift it a little bit, put mud flaps and knobby tires on it. And then, you know, do a little bit to the engine to get more power out of it. And I would have a rally car.
Wow. Lifted. You see, I would go the other way. I would lower it.
I feel like you could have fun in either direction.
I think that's sort of a recipe for fun. You go in both directions quickly. Yeah.
The Juke definitely can go both ways.
Yeah, and I like it with its, I was surprised to find leather seats and stuff in it, and it was about, I think it stickered out about 28, which
that's it did. That's got to be top. Like, yeah. Well, I'm sure, does the Nismo touch 30?
I think the Nismo is less than SL.
Oh, wow.
It's
impressive.
Yeah, that was the best part about it.
I did like the wheels and the rear spoiler.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I don't even find it that ugly. I find the Juke it's certainly an acquired taste, but the more you look at it from different angles, the more you appreciate it, which I guess...
It's like fun ugly or pretty ugly.
Yeah, I guess when you... That's sort of like saying, like, her nose isn't that bad. But, you get used to it. It's funny. It's one of the few cars that looks like a Volkswagen bus at night, like the old buses, which always cracks me up. The other one, incidentally, was the Aztec.
Oh god, the Juke has a really good personality.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it does actually. It's a good time at parties. It's fun. And they replaced that today with a Lexus IS250 all-wheel drive, which I thought I would be disappointed with because it's the 250 and has all of like 3 horsepower.
Yeah.
This is one serious car. Lexus is not fooling around.
Even before this generation IS250, the last one surprised me with how well it handled its like 201 horsepower.
Yeah, but it felt so old, the last
right. IS. And the new one definitely does not.
No, the new one is like, it's and it handles really well. It's super comfy and quiet and composed. And I'm it's only been like a day, so... Don't get me wrong. I'll find stuff to sort of maybe mar my impression, but initially, like I'm really, really impressed. And I was really impressed with the GS too, and that's what you were saying is they kind of make a bunch of decent sedans, except for the LS is always as it has always been.
The thing though about the LS, there's the F Sport, which is kind of silly to have an F Sport version, but I mean, if they're gonna have an RX F Sport, there's no reason not to have an LS. The LS F Sport has a limited slip, and I've done some of the biggest burnouts I've ever done in that car.
I feel like these are things you shouldn't be admitting.
No, I'm fine with it. I mean, I put it on video, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I will not be doing burnouts with this because it's all-wheel drive. But so far, I've found that even the 200 and it might have a little bit more horsepower. It's maybe like
I think it's up from 201 to 204 or something.
Yeah. It doesn't feel slow, though. It doesn't feel like it's lacking for power.
Well, Steven just wrote it up and called it Jennifer Lopez. So I have not driven the 250, but based on that assessment, I would venture to disagree with you.
And I've only driven the rear wheel drive, and that's going to help out the car in terms of weight and just general power delivery.
Yeah. So let me just say that I have not driven the IS350, and I'm sure that at that point I'd be like, why would you get the 250?
Yeah.
And I think one of the arguments that might work is fuel economy, but I don't think the 350 is going to be that much less efficient, given the fact that you've got that much more torque and power on hand. And the 250 is definitely very smooth when it idles, and you know, the larger displacement that engine gets, the more it's going to vibrate and stuff. So
yeah, but Lexus is always good about that stuff. Like even, you know, the big LS, it's as it's sitting there idling, it's pretty smooth.
Yeah. And you know, Lexus would do themselves proud to take that LS engine and stuff it in the IS.
I'm sure like 10 years ago at SEMA, that was the hot thing to do. But somebody should do it now with the new car.
Well, you know, they had the ISF, which was essentially that. So
yeah, that's true too.
They could make a new ISF. I would be very happy with that. And I mean, it's a pretty car. It's surprisingly tight when you get in it, because it's about 3 series size. It's really tidy dimensionally. It doesn't necessarily look that tight on the outside, but then you get in, and you're like, oh, I could reach over and touch everything on the passenger side of the dash.
I think the goal there was to make it like pretty driver focused. And I think that contributes to a lot of the tightness. And I think they did a decent job. I just wish, because it doesn't have the full GS treatment on the inside, right? Because that one has a smaller screen.
Yeah, it doesn't have the normal screen, but
I love that like 12 inch HD super wide IMAX screen.
Do you watch like David Attenborough documentaries?
Yeah, I would sit in my driveway and do that.
the penguin. Yeah. Yeah, anyway, the 350 apparently gets like 19 mpg city, 26 highway, and the 250 with all-wheel drive, both of them with all-wheel drive, the 250 gets 20 city, 27 highway. So that doesn't really seem like I would gladly give up 1 mile per gallon on both of those, because the 350 has 100 more horsepower, which is not insignificant.
It's very significant, one might say. That's a huge jump.
Yeah. So I think, Jeff, we're going to have to send one to Florida so you can be the tiebreaker and you can tell Stephen whether he's out of his mind, because I drove this in like Boston traffic, right? So it didn't really bug me that it didn't have a ton of power. And when I needed it, I could stomp on it and it was fine in traffic. You know, I got into the openings in traffic where I needed to go and it was good. So
I was plenty happy driving 350.
Yeah, I bet.
All right. It was rear-wheel drive, too, so it had the 8-speed. You only have the 6-speed.
Yeah. Whose dog is going nuts? Is that your dog?
I just went mobile with the podcast to shut my dog up.
That's okay. You know what? I have a cat who's probably going to make an appearance at some point, too. I just
He should be quiet now.
He should be quiet.
I have two dachshunds. I like them because they're lowered. They're basically lowered German machines.
Yeah, and they make their own brand of schnitzel, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I refilled my cat's prescription for blood pressure meds the other day, and apparently I've been inconsistent with it because the vet actually called back to chew me out. They were like, it's been since February. Has he not been getting this consistently? I was like, yeah, it's been a little inconsistent. They're like, look, this only works if he's on it the whole time. So are you going to commit to doing that? Or like, we're not going to give him a prescription if you're not going to use it because it's worthless. So, yeah, that made me feel great.
Cat people.
Yeah, sorry. I'm a crazy cat lady. Really, I am. So the Autoblog podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components. And those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting, no matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. So, Mr. Glucker, you were once one of us, and now you're the competition. And I think, quite honestly, with the Hooniverse podcast, you guys are kicking our teeth in.
We had a meteoric, heroic rise right out of the gate, and then Blake and I both got into tons of travel for work, and it kind of started to dip. Plus, we had some audio issues, but now we've got all of that sorted out, and so now we're coming for you.
Yeah, see, we've had all of those things. We've had audio issues, and every now and then, like, I feel like I need to have some giant technical failure that I just managed to rescue. Like once a year, that seems to happen to me. So,
my producer Chris Hayes of ShoutEngine.com even just got a new. I don't know what the equipment's called, but we can plug in 4 mics on the go, have it mobile. We did 3 podcasts from SEMA.
Yeah, Chris has a Shout Engine. Like, I've been looking into that. It's actually not to throw out plugs for free, so he's gonna owe me. but they've got a pretty cool platform there for podcasting, and it's you guys that are there. And who else actually is?
In terms of automotive, because he's getting new podcasts all the time with a wide range of topics. But it's us, the Smoking Tire,
right?
And then the other main one that you know for automotive is Drive and Protect, Larry Cosilla's podcast, the detail guy behind Ammo,
right. So that's a pretty good little enclave. You could get lots of entertainment just right over there. So
yeah, and then he's grabbing some other stuff. Like, he has this really good comedian named Micah Bam Bam White, who's super funny. And then just other random, anything you could think of, he's starting to get those type of podcasts.
I think because I feel like I have a great need to relax, I should start up a Broga podcast. I'll be the yogi.
There is a yoga podcast on Shout Engine.
But there is not a Broga podcast.
Oh, okay. Okay. I like your twist.
Broga is yoga for bros.
Downward right? Facing dog into like a vodka Red Bull.
Word. Kind of defeats the purpose of yoga. Actually, my creative director at my day job is very deep into yoga. And he was like, yeah, you go to like a Sunday morning yoga session, the whole room, because it's, you know, it makes you sweat. The whole room smells like vodka. Often. Oh, yeah.
I don't necessarily enjoy yoga. I do like yoga pants.
especially those never mind.
You were thinking Lululemon.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. Right. Yeah. So anyway, moving on. what else are you guys doing at Hooniverse? You've been around a while, and there's a bunch of people over there who have.
Yeah. We started in way back in 2009, and then we've been kicking around. I left for a year to do this stint at some small automotive website you may have heard of called Autoblog.
Right.
And then I came back to Hooniverse. Right now, we actually have a really cool project car in the works. that I'm very excited because it's finally moving forward. I bought a 1984 Mercedes-Benz 300 TD, the diesel wagon.
That's probably one of the stupidest things you've ever done.
No, I love wagons and I'm a massive Mercedes fanboy. So, we're ripping the diesel out. In fact, the diesel's already out. I sold it to this delightful college kid for $400, which I think is a good deal because that
ripped
car
him
that,
off.
No way. That engine has 200,000 miles and it'll go to a million.
Did you even check the compression on it? It probably had like 3 PSI on one of the
started up every time though. and his engine was blown, so this will buy him another 100,000 for sure. But either way, that engine is gone, and so the engine bay is empty, and we're going to fill it with a 5.7-liter Hemi.
Where are you getting said 5.7-liter Hemi?
Already bought it. Next found it on eBay.
Charger.
Nope. 2004 Dodge Ram.
All right. I think the cam might be a little weird for, you know.
Oh, it's the whole thing is going to be weird. But
whatever.
And the transmission is huge from the truck. I found a 47,000-mile Ram that was just obliterated in the rear end. So we got engine, trans, harness, and computer for much less than I wanted to spend. It's sitting on the floor of the shop where the wagon is. And the engine actually almost bolts up, which is insane.
Wow.
We have to get fits right where the cross member is. We have to get a new oil pan though, because the sump is in the back and we need one in the front. And I found one made for the Hemi, so it'll fit.
Nice. Yes.
The steering is oof, the steering box.
Oh, that's right, because there's a steering box, not a rack.
Yep. Fun. We got to put in a call of Unisteer and figure that out.
that's like, I mean, those old European wagons that are all rear-wheel drive, they really lend themselves to an infusion of American V8. Like, if you've ever seen the various, like, Volvos with the 5-liter or the small block swapped in, it just fits like it was born there, because they had various German V8s that were much bigger, actually, than the pushrod stuff. So
yeah, I mean this engine bay at one point I believe it was used to hold like 6.3s or 6.9s, and you know, so the engine I know it fits now, no problem, because we've tested it. But we're definitely gonna have to cut the transmission tunnel to make for this huge basically truck transmission.
Yeah, it's a plasma cutter. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah, the guy, the sparkle wrench. But we also have we have to change out the rear end suspension, because it has in 1984 it had a self-leveling rear suspension.
Yes, Neva mats. Woohoo!
Yeah, so there. That has to go.
Nice and expensive.
Yep.
The cool
There's
thing
a company
is
out there that makes a swap to coils though, so we're good.
Yeah, yeah. And does it have the, not to get too weird, does it have the weird compensator spring set up on the rear axle?
I have no idea.
Like, there's some of the Mercedes, they have like three springs. They have one that's like horizontal or something. I don't know. Mercedes are always the Mercedes. You know, they're just right. Like, they do it the Mercedes way and that's it.
Right.
So
I'm just happy it has the third row of seats. So if I can get someone to sit back there, well, once the engine's installed, and get a good shot of burnouts facing backwards, basically.
What you need to do is have a child.
I'll have to borrow
someone's
child.
Right, Jeff? Right? Am I right with the child in the car thing?
Or get two dog seats. Ooh, for my dogs.
I don't know. I mean,
they're German.
That's true, though. That's true. They'll start barking, you know, Mercedes Uber Alles or something.
My goal is to bring the car to SEMA next year.
Well, good. We'll be looking forward to it. Yeah,
we have a good partner coming on potentially for exhaust, which I don't want to name yet because it's not definite, but their name rhymes with Pagnaflow.
Gosh.
Well, it's better than Horla.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck with it. I know that one of your guys for Hooniverse, Camille, who's Car Guy Dad, he's out here in New England with me. So he came up to me at one of our last meetings and he was like, in his Eastern European way, where can I get the transmission for a 2002 Buick? It's like with the supercharger. I was like, I don't know, what are you doing? So apparently there was a Lemons team fielded.
Yep.
Did that happen or is that?
Yeah, the race already happened. I guess they had good results. It had an actual park bench on the back for the wing. I think the car is going to run again next year, and I might actually fly out and run that race with Camille.
Is that the one where the car went into the other car's window?
Yes. Same race. Great shot, though. That was an awesome angle on that video.
But it wasn't you guys that got crashed into?
No, no. Some guy was driving, and then all of a sudden, like, he's just, you can't really see. It looks like he's ahead of the pack a little bit, and all of a sudden, a tire appears in his passenger side window, and then, like, a shark cresting out of the ocean and then disappearing back between the waves. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, Lemons seems like a pretty good time. We should get an Autoblog Lemons team together.
You guys really need to. It's a lot of fun.
I was working on getting an ALMS team, but then they went and shut it down. So
damn it.
I guess we're screwed.
Yeah.
The Flying Lizard Autoblog joint team didn't come together.
Yeah.
No. Well, there's always next year for racing. But the other thing that both of you Jeffs, we have the Jeffs on the podcast. The other thing that you guys did recently was you both went to SEMA. So SEMA
and cage match. And we saw each other for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, we saw each other near some pistons.
Two ships passing in the night.
Where they're like, well, did you lock eyes? And yes, then all the background noise drifted away and a choir started singing. Okay, anyway.
All of a sudden the dubstep got quieter.
Yeah, I can imagine SEMA is just sort of like one, and it's a big place too. It's enormous.
Giant.
It's huge.
So it's one big, loud, vibrating hall full of fluorescent cars. Is that what it was, or did you see cool stuff?
There's plenty of cool stuff, but mostly what you described.
Yeah, it's you wade through a bunch of okay and just not okay stuff to find the occasionally cool things. I really liked the Hotchkiss booth. Their setup was cool. Where they mimicked, what's it called, with McQueen in San Francisco. Why can't I think of the movie? This should be really easy.
Bullet?
Yeah, thank you. That was
really that what it was supposed to be? The Charger doing a wheelie? Yeah.
Well, it's like the Charger's taking off and the Mustang's landing. And then if you looked at the picture behind them, it was a big picture of San Francisco. So
I didn't have time to look at pictures.
Yeah, if you looked at it head on with a picture, it made more sense.
I was like, what's going on here? It's a Charger doing a wheelie. I'll just keep walking.
You know whose Charger that was? It's Brock the guy who does the voice of Brock Sampson. What's his name? Patrick Warburton. Hmm. Putty from Seinfeld.
Yes. Interesting.
Mm. So did you guys see the minivan? There was a minivan. I saw
it briefly.
What did you
think? Minivan.
The Odyssey, right?
1,000 horsepower.
Yes. Odyssey? Yes, exactly.
I should have got a closer look, but I like walked up to it. There was a crowd. I looked at it and then I was like, all right, I walked away. I should have went back and looked at it more closely just because it isn't I love the idea.
I think that describes probably like a whole lot of different episodes at any car show. Like I walked up to it. There was a crowd. I looked at it.
Yeah.
Turned around. And I went and got a hot dog.
That's pretty much it. Pretty much. No, I probably left and like went to hit a blackjack table or something.
So
the only van I remember seeing, it was a Corvair van out front with this giant engine in the middle row.
That's pretty badass.
I never had a chance to go look at it. I walked by and I never had a chance to look at it up close, but it was so cool.
There was another Corvair. There was actually like the not the van, the car. And someone was telling me about it because I didn't get to see it. I guess it was outside. They're like, yeah, they put a V8 in it. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Oh, they moved the engine to the front. I'm like, oh, that's terrible.
No,
yeah.
there was a guy there, and if you look it up, it's in the, like Special Interest Autos, and I think Hemmings blog republished it actually. There was a guy who put a Jaguar V12 in the front of his Corvair, and he had it like that for years and years and years, and I think he actually just passed away. But it's actually really neat. Like at first, you're like, oh, I totally ruined the car, and then you're like, well, you know, it's a Corvair. He
piqued my interest with Jaguar V12.
Yeah, he did his thing. So, In terms of cool stuff, though, like what did you guys see that really, really stuck with you at SEMA? Or did it all just go by in a blur?
It's nothing new, but I really like the Dynacorn bodies just because I would love to own a Bronco like that someday. Other than that, I mean, I really can't think of anything.
that's known, boys and girls, as sensory overload.
Well, you know what could have been really cool is that old F-Series pickup with the Shelby GT500.
Oh, that thing looked like it had a stroke.
Yeah, the front end design was terrible.
Oh, was that the one that Gene Simmons presented? Yeah. Okay. I don't know who the other guy is.
I mean, it was cool. You take an F-100, put a Shelby engine in it, boom. That's looked perfect. Like it had a stroke. Don't do anything else.
Now I look at it and I can see it's like droopy.
It looks like it has buck teeth. It's not cool. I mean, the idea is cool. They just butchered it. Oh, another thing that was cool was I was invited into Bo Bachman's rig, and I got to have drinks with him.
Does the story get racier from there? Or?
No, but he introduced me to somebody who was a guitarist in an 80s like rock band, and I don't know which rock band, yeah. But it might have been Guns N' Roses.
There's lots of guys who were guitarists in 80s rock right. bands who are now... Yeah, man, I hated the 80s. And Bo, that's the guy from Galpin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Galpin was there, I'm sure, with like a big presence.
Yeah.
And so SEMA was like Specialty Equipment Manufacturer Association, but it seems like lately there's been a lot more manufacturer presence there, and we saw that this year with stuff like the Mopar thing.
Mopar went crazy.
Yeah, that really stands out. They had the Shaker stuff and with the Challenger, but there was
Chevy was big too.
Yeah, they had did you guys get to check out the 4x4 E-Rod with the
oh my goodness, that was hands down my favorite thing there. Just because it's like you see those old square Chevys. I mean, it was like from the early 70s to the late 80s. You see them everywhere, rusted out, and
right.
I just look at it and I'm like, that thing could be perfect. And they Wait, made
they,
this one.
Did they put an E-Rod in like a C10?
Yeah,
it's a K10.
Oh, I didn't see it. Oh,
it's they put a 5.3 crate engine, but the best part is it was built by the same people who build GM prototype cars. So these people build cars by hand, and they did a frame off job on this thing, and it was just gorgeous. Everything you looked at was perfect.
Yeah, it looks like the most perfect Chevy pickup you'll see lately. And yeah, it's got. I got an E-Rod with a 4L70E automatic, and you know, it basically reads like the truck you'd build if you had a lot of money and a Summit catalog.
And it's not a lot of money. I mean, I'm sure getting that truck into this condition.
The E-Rod's not cheap. I mean, E-Rod starts at like 10, doesn't it?
But crate the whole package was 10 grand, engine, transmission, and wiring, and whatnot.
That seems like not a bad deal when you
a crate engine. You're gonna get. I mean, you're going to pay out the nose anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you're not, it's like some AutoZone engine.
Jasper, who I'm sure actually remanufactures really solid engines, but yeah. I'm just saying. The crate engine is different.
From the manufacturer side, the Chevy was my favorite, but there was a Mustang there. It was technically a mid-engine Mustang because they moved the entire firewall back. And put an entire carbon fiber body on it. But it just looked like your normal run-of-the-mill late 80s Mustang GT.
Wait, was that the dark gray one?
No, it was bright red.
It's the Creations in Chrome top.
There was a dark gray, like a full carbon body Mustang.
Right, that's like the 65 to 66 Fastback, the Wing Brothers.
Yeah.
Carbon fiber. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like there was a lot of stuff. Did it make you want to actually go work on your Jeepsters, Jeff?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Awesome. I walk around and I talk to a few people, like some of the smaller booths, and they were telling me how they got into it, and it was the same thing. Like, they always wanted this one vehicle, and I'm like, man, this is my story. Only they have, you know,
money. Yeah, that's the actually I think my wife's nephew was there with his company. They're in Utah. They're called Kindigit Design or whatever. It's such a big place though. Like there's all of these manufacturers that like make this stuff, and the car manufacturers are there now with their aftermarket parts. And then there's just a bunch of, you know, independent shops and stuff that do the restorations and stuff, right?
You know who I like actually, now that I'm thinking about it, is it's Omex ADA, the Jeep parts supplier. Their booth, they had like every old Jeep sitting there to show that they could give you parts to restore everything from a 41 and on up. And they even had one of the amphibious ones. Also, they had what's his name, Arlie Ermey, signing autographs.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you go up and just tell him to slap you around and call you Private Pile?
No, I was interviewing the main guy there as Ermey was signing autographs in the background. I kept getting distracted.
Yeah. I mean, they even had a brown Jeep Cherokee there, brand new one, the Trail Carver, which is like apparently a more spiffed up Trail Hawk, which is the best Cherokee if you're going to get the Cherokee. So
I keep hearing that.
Well, because it looks tough, you know, like the other Cherokees. Like, listen, the Cherokees, they're going to sell lots and lots of them.
Right.
No matter what anybody says who doesn't like it. Like, there's going to be lots of people. There's going to be lots more people who like it than people who don't. And, you know, if you want to be like the Porsche 911 purist of the Jeep market, go buy a Wrangler and shut up.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's cool that they're actually like Mopar has really embraced. I think out of all the manufacturers, Mopar has really embraced the aftermarket more so than what you see from Ford or GM. But maybe because I wasn't on the ground, that's not accurate.
Ford did have a pretty big footprint in one
but
of the
halls. They were all like wacky concepts. I mean, I'm sure you could do it.
Right.
But the Mopar booth was stuff that you could do at a dealership.
Right. And yeah. That's what was interesting about the Chevy one as well.
Yes.
What did they have?
Just, I mean, the whole deal was supposed to be, yeah, dealer stuff.
So that's, I mean, awesome. What's the dog's name?
Frank and Beans.
Frank and Beans. Nice. Welcome to the podcast, Frank and Beans. you know, one of the things that I, every now and then, I will pull onto the highway with my own Jeep and I'll go, you know, this could really use a supercharger. So I'm going to have to look into that. Did you guys manage to go by the Chevy Silverado Cheyenne and catch that?
Was that
I had my head down.
Was that the Z28 Silverado thing?
Yeah, it's like the blacked out powered Silverado.
But again, it's parked right next to the K10, so
yeah,
my focus was in other directions.
That sounds awesome.
And then it was right next to the Copo Camaro.
You see, okay, the Copo Camaro, the new Copo Camaro seems kind of dishonest to me.
Well, I mean, the whole time they've been chasing the Cobra Jet.
I mean, it's just like, guys, I realize these are somewhat retro-styled cars and stuff, but can we please get out of the 60s? I'm so tired of my parents' generation. Just like, enough with the Copo. Just like call it something else. Call it like the Corvette, the Camaro Mullet Edition or whatever. Just like...
I think that's implied for every Camaro. Except the Z28.
That thing's
going to be awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't like the Camaro. And I really like the Z28.
Yeah. So, along with SEMA, though, there were some other things that happened this week. Cadillac CTS was named the Motor Trend Car of the Year. Not too long ago, it was already named the Motor Trend Car of the Year. So, seems like Cadillac is continuing to be on a roll. What do you guys think? Did they nail it, or did they kind of... What's your take on it?
I mean, unfortunately, I have not had seat time in the newest CTS, but I read some other reviews and it seems like it's pretty excellent. If I could go from the transition from CTS to ATS, and if they're continuing to evolve on that line, I would imagine things are looking pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like, Jeff, have you driven this?
Nope, I haven't.
No? Okay, so all three of us have lived vicariously. I managed to see it. New York.
The funny thing is, I saw it recently. Another guy in town had one, and I thought it was an XTS from the back.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, it has presence on its own, but when you slot it in with the other caddies, they've either done a really good job of making all the cars look like they belong together, or they've done a bad job of making all the cars look distinctive enough. So you can tell the difference. And I don't really know what the difference is. You know, I'd have to sort of stare at them a little more. And I will do that because it's a difficult job to stare at pictures of Cadillacs. I know. But I will do that for the people, and I will have an answer at some point soon. But, I mean, Cadillac seems like they're on a roll. Like, not too long ago, we were saying, hey, you know, this may fizzle out. And then they come up with the ATS and now the CTS and even the XTS. You think we're going to see this continue?
I think we will because, I mean, we just got the V-Sport and everybody's excited about the V-Sport. And then there'll be a new level of excitement when they finally show us the actual Vs. And then, I mean, an ATS V will be very impressive. And then now they finally got that new Escalade. I'm really curious to see what that looks like in person because in pictures – I'm mixed. It could be really good. You know, who knows? So if they keep moving down this line, it seems like things are trending up.
And Jeff, being down in Florida, you're going to see lots and lots more of the brand new Cadillacs than the rest of us, right?
I'm already seeing a lot of XTSs.
Yeah, XTSs seem to be like they nailed that one in terms of being popular with the crowd that buys Caddies.
Based on that car, I know I would love driving the CTS because that is a decent big car. And I could just imagine you shrink down a little bit, make a rear-wheel drive, and that's essentially what the CTS is.
Yeah, I don't know. I have this sort of love-hate thing going on with the XTS because it's like, really, what is it other than LaCrosse with a very nice interior?
Well, I mean, isn't it supposed to be kind of a placeholder, though, like or a stopgap even? There's supposed to be the real big Caddies coming.
Yeah, eventually. I guess. It's kind of just like, wait till my brother gets here. Like, I don't know. Fight on your own. Like, and it is a good car in its class. Like, given the XTS versus the MKS over at Lincoln, you know, the XTS, I feel like that car wins. Even though the MKS is not a bad car either, but it's just the XTS, I think, is better. So, like, in that sense, it's a decent vehicle, but it's if they're going to just sort of hobble it right out of the gate by being like, oh, well, yeah, this one, you know, we're going to replace it soon, but here's this one for now.
Right. Like,
that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
You know, this
year, I don't think they'll ever get rid of that. Like, the front wheel drive, big cushy sedan, I think Cadillac can't get rid of that. They've had the DeVille for too long that abandoning that would be getting rid of one of its key customers.
Yeah, I think that they need that car. And it's almost like they need everything that they make now. And the ATS is sort of their car in that smaller size category and sort of entry price for the luxury segment. And you know, this is the second time that the CTS has won in, you know, 6 years. It won back in 2008 too. So that's nothing to sneeze at. And, you know, the Cadillac made it to the finish line here when its competition didn't even really place in terms of being contenders. So that says a lot for what they've managed to do with this car. Just got the latest issue of Car and Driver and in a comparison test there. The 5 Series was actually at the bottom of the list, and the CTS came in second in the comparison. So it seems like by all measures, Cadillac is finally, we say this every time there's a new CTS, it's like Cadillac has finally delivered on the promise of getting their mojo back. It took them 15 years to rebuild that brand, if you look at it.
Well, I think the first CTS kind of said, hey, we can do this. And then the second CTS said, no, serious guys, we can do this. And now, like, it's gone beyond doubting, like, one car and Cadillac as a whole. I mean, they're no longer putting all their weight on the CTS. I mean, they have all these other cars coming out. So now this car can, you know, open up a little bit and really go up against BMW and Mercedes.
Yeah. I mean, I've not heard anything bad about the way these cars are tuned in terms of ride and handling. Everybody loves their chassis. Engine-wise, it's got the 2-liter turbo. For starters, it's got the 3.6-liter V6. And then you can get the was the twin turbocharged, right?
Yeah, the 420 horse V Sport.
And then what are we going to, we expecting the CTS-V is going to be the 6.2 liter supercharged again?
I mean, I don't know where else they'd go with it, that there are other things they could possibly do, but I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a retuned version of that where we're now pushing closer to 600 horsepower.
That does not suck.
Right. The only thing I hope though, and I mean, I would understand if they wouldn't do this, but because I love wagons, I'd really like to see a next generation CTS-V wagon. I'm not holding out hope, because that was kind of like an amazing moment in automotive history for me personally, but you never know.
Well, I mean, you can go worship at the feet of Bob Lutz and try to get it. But here's the thing, right? When you read through this Motor Trend article, right, like they say things that you know they're never gonna say about this car again, like noise, vibration, and harshness from the powertrain and suspension are notably absent, with only the slap of tires to remind you of the world outside. I have a hard time believing that that kind of stuff is going to show up the next time they review this car when they're not putting it on the cover as their car of the year. Like when they're comparing with the Audi A6 and the BMW 5 Series and Mercedes E-Class. They're going to say things like wind noise, tire roar. Yeah. You know, like does that... I don't know. It just seems like breathless praise to me, and I don't know. Maybe that's...
I feel like you kind of have to in an article like the Car of the Year article. You almost have to pull out your book of cliches, and because you're bestowing your publication's highest honor upon a vehicle, you kind of have to just put your thoughts aside about what you want to write and just be like, just get overly prosy and breathy and just dramatic, because if this is really the car of the year, it maybe then it does deserve the, you know, oh my goodness, Cadillac and so refined and super special. I can forgive that language that happens in there, but yeah, the next article where it's like, oh, CTS V-Sport head to head against whoever, they're gonna be like, oh man, it was a little bumpy and there was some wind noise.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So I call shenanigans. That's what
you can do that on any car of the year, though.
We can do it on, like, it's, you know, no, never mind.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. You had a thought.
No.
Okay. This is the where we back away from bus throwing. I get it.
Yes.
Just recall that in 1984, I believe the Renault Alliance was the Motor Trend car of the year.
That sounds more like a Hooniverse car of the year.
That sounds more like a nightmare.
Exactly.
That sounds like French car built in Kenosha with AMC labor and serviced by AMC's very tiny dealer network who did not know how to service said French car. Car right. of the year sold a whole bunch at first, and then
The one of the times I most agreed, and I'm not saying I disagree with Motor Trend's call here, but the one time I think I most agreed, even though they got the most flack, was when they called the Volt the car of the year.
I don't disagree with the Volt being a significant car. It's really hard, I think, to do the car of the year or like anything.
Sure.
Of the year. And now there's a lot of it too. Like how many awards do we report on, Jeff? Like there's a lot, right?
Yeah, and I was just gonna say I could just imagine, you know, back in 1984, there weren't a lot of good cars. and now, I mean, the list, I mean, I'm just going off what I recall from the upcoming North American car year. The list runs the gamut of everything from the small up to the 50,000 plus cars. So how do you judge those cars like against each other? That I've always wondered that myself, like, how do you, as a judge, do that?
Yeah, well, and Motor Trend has the budget and the people to get them all together and drive a bunch of stuff back to back, which is, it's like what Car and Driver does with their 10 best, too. So they drive a bunch of stuff back to back, which I think is really the only way you can sort of crown a real... I guess it's really the only objective way, right? You try them all, and then you'll see in that short duration what really rises to the top. So... That doesn't seem like a bad plan. I believe an automaker that has never won Car of the Year from Motor Trend is Mitsubishi. I could be wrong with that. They're not going to be a recent winner anyway. They have apparently revealed plans. Like they call it Drive at Earth, which to me says we're driving this company into the ground. But that's just my initial thought. They have recommitted time and time again to the U.S. market, and what they're saying now is that they're not leaving. They're going to be selling Renault, Samsung sedans over here in the U.S., and they have a new business plan. Mr. Ross, what do you know about this?
Their business plan or Mitsubishi in general?
Yeah, both. I mean,
Well, I mean, for their upcoming vehicles, I think this year they're going to show off three new concept cars at Tokyo next week. And for the U.S., they're promising a new pickup, SUV, and plug-in hybrids.
Is that for the U.S., the pickup?
Is it not?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking. I couldn't find any confirmation on that. And I think that would be pretty interesting if it were, especially it's the Triton pickup. I don't know if it's for the U.S. market or not. It may not be.
I think that's the big question.
Yeah. But yeah,
anything's better than the Mirage.
What's so bad about the Mirage? It gets 44 miles to the gallon.
So does a Vespa.
Vespa is arguably more stylish.
Yes.
The Mirage is probably safer in a crash than the Vespa.
But I mean, looking, Mitsubishi is taking flak for obvious reasons. I mean, their most recent vehicles are not that competitive.
I like that you're saying not that competitive. Their recent vehicles are not good. Well,
I haven't driven the new Mirage, but just looking at them, they both scream like, hey, 1998 called.
Yeah. I mean, there is the Mirage itself, like, looks like what it is. It looks like a very expensive, very few frills vehicle. The Outlander actually is probably their star product really right now in their US lineup anyway. It's the most recently updated. They're still offering the Gallant for sale on their website.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I think it's like a 2008 model still.
it's like they just got some left. Like, anybody want week old donuts? It's like they're not horrible, horrible cars in that sense. Like, they're just, everybody else has moved on, and Mitsubishi didn't really invest in their cars. Now, part of what they're doing is they're doing like the Mitsubishi version of one Ford. Without apparently anywhere near the amount of money. what they did was they're aligning, like, they had a bunch of stuff that was US only, and they've killed a lot of that, which is why we've seen the model line really trimmed down in the US. And really they're focusing on stuff like the Outlander Sport and the Outlander and again the Mirage and other stuff that they're going to be developing for other markets and see if they fit into the US market. But they had vehicles that were just US only. And I think that they went from 350,000 cars in 2002, which might've been when they were doing their 000 thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They helped ruin the economy themselves.
they got in all kinds of trouble for that whole deal. Did not do what they thought it was going to do. Just numbers really momentarily. But they're down to, I think they sold 57,000, 58,000 cars in the US in 2012.
Could you get 000 on an Evo when they did that?
Was Evo around back then?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Was it? What year?
It was early 2000s. I forget exactly when. You could definitely get like 000 on an Eclipse, which...
I'm good.
most were for the Lancers or Gallants.
Gallants. I keep, every time I bring up the Gallant, I just keep thinking of trying to pester Steven for another one. I'm like, Steve, where's my Gallant? He's like at the airport.
Yeah. You have to review a Diamante first.
I would be fine reviewing a Diamante. I didn't even see it in their lineup. But yeah, they killed off a bunch of stuff, right? They got rid of the Gallant is basically out of production. The Endeavor, the Eclipse, those are all done for the US market, even if there's still
remember
some,
when those were say, things?
The Eclipse was pretty great, actually.
Well, a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it was like all wheel drive, turbo, GSXT, whatever that trim was.
Yeah. And now it's not. It turned into like a 78 Thunderbird before it died.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, so they've trimmed their lineup. They're going to reinvest their, this drive at Earth thing is like, it's safety technology. It's, all wheel drive and, you know, just electrification and hybrids and stuff. Like it's all of this sort of like, here's how we're going to move our plan forward. There's an actual, there's a video where they use the Celtic Woman song, You Raise Me Up, which I believe is their cover of a Josh Groban song. You Raise Me Up. Anyway, they use the entire song in this video. And the guy talks very slowly, to explain the drive at Earth technology, and it's apparently a suite of technologies to balance driving pleasure, toughness, and safety, and environmental performance. So their big tagline.
The only way that this At Earth is going to work and Mitsubishi's comeback is going to work is if they reveal electric vehicles that get 200 on a charge. That's it.
Well, I mean,
are you going to do it on price or, you know, something like a ridiculous claim of some sort? But I think the biggest, like, I don't know why or how someone would buy a car with such a limited dealer network. And I mean, you're pretty much buying a car that has no support.
Oh, well, people did it for like Saturn.
But you can take a Saturn to a Chevy dealership.
Well, no. Back when Saturn was like Saturn, you had to travel to get there. Like, there was one dealer for a large area of territory back when they were not welcomed into the rest of the GM fold. So I don't know. I mean, I guess they're really their only weapon is price at this point, although they're probably going to have to balance that with something if they want to survive, or they're just going to siphon off a bunch of money from the Mitsubishi Kiritsu over in Japan that, you know, at a certain point they'll decide, like, hey, this lost too much money. We should stop this. But I think the deal with Samsung and to bring the, what is it, the S something or other sedan over here. That's probably not a bad deal. So we'll see where that goes. But it still seems like Mitsubishi's plan for the U.S. is dubious. They have increased their advertising budget, so people know about them. Well, that was the other challenge, right? Like, what do you think of when you think of Mitsubishi?
Just the Evo.
Just the Evo. Okay. That's not bad, thinking of the Evo.
Yeah, but that is the Evo is one of the most exciting powertrains wrapped in one of the worst cars. The interior of that car is – I've had this conversation with Matt from the Smoking Tire, Matt Fair, and we both agree. You're paying like almost, you know, between $30,000 and $40,000 for just a wonderfully exciting powertrain. So much fun. Even with the paddle shifters in the MR or, you know, the GS with the manual gearbox. And then inside the car is not good.
How is that different from a WRX or like an STI?
Subaru is working to improve their cars.
Yeah.
The Impreza WRX STI is like a matured Evo. I mean,
It
still has a ways to go.
It's a less crappy crap box with a big motor.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right. So, but
there is already a new WRX on the horizon, and, you know, it'll make that gap even wider.
Well, we should get to the WRX. One of the things that I should do first, though, is I recently spoke with Matt Edmonds from TireRack.com to lead us through some tire rack subjects to talk about, you know, tires and wheels and the things that Tire Rack offers. So we'll go to that for a few minutes, and then we will come back. Hi, I'm Dan Roth here from the Autoblog Podcast. We are with Matt Edmonds from TireRack.com, sponsor of the Autoblog Podcast. And as the temperatures drop, air pressure also drops. And that's an interesting concept I don't think that too many folks consider. What's the Tire Rack have to say about that?
Well, I'll tell you, it's not so much what we have to say about it. It's pure science, I guess you would say. But no, really, as you know, temperatures are going down outside. You know, we often think about, you know, our tires going down because we have a leak in them, or, you know, a lot of people are aware that the tires lose air pressure over time. You know, a pound to 2 pounds a month, just because a tire is a balloon and the air does leak out of it when it's under pressure. But air pressure, when you have temperature differences, for every 10 degrees of temperature change, the air pressure in your tire changes 1 pound, 1 PSI, in the same direction. So if temperatures are going down, your air pressure goes down as well. And, this time of the year, if you check your air pressures in the middle of September and it was, you know, 80 degrees outside, and now all of a sudden it's a cool October morning and it's 30 degrees outside, that 50 degree temperature difference will equate to a 5 pound difference in the air pressure in your tires. So it's very, very important, particularly this time of the year, to keep track of that. And then, you know, that compounds with what we mentioned before about just losing air pressure out of your tires in general. So it's very, very important to check the air pressure on a monthly basis, and especially important this time of the year with temperatures falling.
Well, and I think a lot of folks would say, too, you know, the TPMS, tire pressure monitoring system, has been updated. So shouldn't that catch it now?
You know, it's really interesting. If you have a direct system, which is actually measuring the air pressure, so it means you've got sensors that are inside of each tire and wheel, generally on the back of the valve stem, that are actually measuring the air pressure, they will sense that. If you have an indirect system that is, a lot of vehicles have, that is really monitoring the rolling radius of the tire, and they're using sensors that are part of the ABS system or traction control system to do that, those systems will not, because all the tires are going down together.
I see. So there's nothing, there's no delta.
There's no delta. There's absolutely no delta. And, you know, we've shown that. That's one of the downfalls to an indirect TPMS system. You know, having those tire pressure monitors, I mean, they will, but generally they won't send you a signal until you've really gone beyond a point that, you know, the tire, it still can be drivable, but the issue becomes you can do damage to the tire, you know, before you get to that difference that actually kicks on the TPMS system. So very, very important, just because, you know, you can damage a tire and you look at the tire from the outside, you can't tell you've damaged it. You reinflate it and off you go. And this is why, you know, a lot of times you'll have vehicles that you'll have blowouts on, because you damage the interior of the tire because, A, it runs hotter when the tire pressure goes down and you're flexing that sidewall more. That's where the heat comes from. You know, excessive heat will damage the structure of the tire, the components inside, and weaken the tire, and much more susceptible to a blowout where, you know, you may hit a pothole in the road and experience that blowout where the sidewall rips and the tire fails. Whereas if the tire had been maintained properly, you'd hit that same pothole and the tire would not have failed.
Yeah, so it seems like it's a cheap insurance policy, because the tire gauge is really not that expensive.
No.
And also, it's a couple other things that come to mind, too. It sounds like it's an efficiency thing.
It is.
If your tires are low, you're going to lose fuel economy. And also, you're going to shorten the life of your tires if you run underinflated. So there's a couple of pretty good points to be made for, you know, spending $20 on a air pressure gauge.
And the time to check the air pressure, and, you know, the best time to check the air pressure, obviously, is in the morning. If you have the opportunity to do it before you start on your morning drive to work, important to check the pressure in all the tires when they're cool. You know, one of the things you should always do, if you have a compressor at home, and a lot of vehicles have them now as part of the emergency kit, a small compressor that allows you to just there, if you have to drive somewhere to get air pressure, you know, check your pressure at home, and then check your pressure when you get there to see how much the pressure has changed just based on that drive, because, you know, your tire will warm up and the pressure will go up a little bit. But that'll give you the ability to adjust that pressure, keep that difference in mind, and add, you know, additional air to the vehicle, you know, so that you're at the proper pressure. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, efficiency-wise, think about if you had to push a wheelbarrow and the front tire was flat on it, it's pretty hard to push it. It's the same thing with your vehicle. And it also allows that tire to still wear properly if you maintain the pressure. Because if you don't, you'll start to get irregular wear on the tire, and that will certainly shorten the life of the tire.
Yeah, and it's performance-wise, it's a lot more fun. When things are the way they're supposed to be.
It is amazing. You know, you have people that say, gosh, you know, I just don't seem to have the steering response in this tire. And you go out and you check their air pressure and you say, well, here, we'll put a little air on the tires. And wow.
Yeah, it's like a whole new car.
Now I have response. So.
Well, all right. Well, that's something that we should all keep an eye on as it gets colder out here. And when you put your winter tires, that you've undoubtedly got, because you've been listening to our recommendations for years and years now. Check the pressure when you put them on. And Matt Edmonds from TireRack.com, I appreciate you coming on the podcast to raise awareness and your ongoing sponsorship to help us stay on the air.
Well, it's our pleasure, and take care of those things. You know, they are important. They're carrying they're containing the air that carries your vehicle, and that air is extremely important. So make sure you maintain it.
All right. So I want to thank Matt Edmonds and TireRack.com for their continued sponsorship of the Autoblog podcast. Before we got to that, we were talking about the Mitsubishi Evo and the Subaru WRX, which brings me to my next point, is the 2015 Subaru WRX that we are all likely to see very soon. We saw a teaser of it. And Jeff, Glucker, you're probably closer than we are to seeing this because you're going to be at LA and it's going to be at the LA show.
Yeah, I personally think it could look pretty awesome because it looks – I mean, a lot of people are saying it's going to be ugly. I think it looks pretty awesome.
Just when has it not been ugly?
That's again, I like ugly cars. It's the old 22B? What's the one that everybody loves?
The Bug Eye one, right?
Yeah, that one's pretty awesome. But this I think this looks like a muscular WRX, and I think that's kind of cool. I just wish it looked exactly like the concept car.
Yeah, I think we all do. Because did you get to see that? Jeff, you were in New York, right?
I was.
Yeah, did you get to see that, like walk by the concept car?
That was a good-looking car.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
Well, and after this teaser, I think today, actually, there's a picture floating around supposedly showing the full body of the WRX.
Yeah, I saw that. Because that's what I was going to say is the... What did you think of that picture?
It looked a little frumpy. I mean, but I mean, it's got like the wide body, like a big gaping snorkel on the front. Like it's really aggressive. And then it just has like a normal, like center part.
Right. It's like a dude who just does curls. Like everything else is just all atrophy. I think the official teaser, the hood picture, looks great. If the rest of the car looks as good as that, if it's integrated really nicely, we're good to go. If it looks like the picture that's been floating around, that kind of reminded me of a Corolla S.
Like that, oh man,
the taped on.
I can see that. Yeah, actually.
So I was kind of like, hope it's going to be better than that. We'll see. It's going to still have, it's like 260. What do you think it's going to have in terms of horsepower, right? It's going to be lots and lots of fun. 265 horsepower is what the outgoing WRX had. So I would expect us to start there.
Right. And I mean, that car was fun to drive. I mean, even if you went from the STI to the non-STI WRX, it's still the WRX. It's still a fun car even with that 265. So if they bump that up a little bit, I think we'll be in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
I would prefer the WRX over the STI.
That's been the age-old argument for a while.
I mean, you're spending...
Age-old.
You're spending like $10,000 for 40 horsepower.
Yeah, and the WRX is slightly more livable. Like, the extra stuff that you get with the STI, unless you're going to really use it, it's not all that useful. If you need it, if you want it, definitely. But if you're just driving to, you know, to work and you want to have the best because you must have the best, that's dumb.
Yeah, yes, the non-STI WRX has always been a pretty good value compared to the STI. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, once you live with it for a year, if you still want more power, there's so many options out there on the aftermarket.
That whole aftermarket thing is something that one of these days I'll buy a car that has huge aftermarket support and I'll have a good time.
That doesn't sound like fun.
No, I need to be fabricating things that I could just buy for another car, because why would we want to have things be easy?
Well, that's why I'm having someone else actually put my wagon together.
That's smart, crazy talk. Man. You're living like a rich person. What is that?
Well, it might be the build is sponsored.
Oh, I see. It's sponsored.
This podcast is sponsored by the fine people at Tire Rack.
That's true. So you want your build to actually like finish and stuff too.
Right. Right.
Because my transmission swap, not sponsored. Also, not done.
Right.
I cleaned up the yard this weekend because it's autumn here in New England. And so I borrowed my brother-in-law's van to put the Leaf vacuum thing in. And I was like, oh, I could totally fit a transmission in here. I should just buy one off eBay instead of fixing the one that I've got. Or like Craigslist or something. So now I'm trying to find one for like $200.
Nice.
on Craigslist that's local that I can just use the van to pick up. And that's my little story. So yeah, the WRX, we're going to see it soon in LA. So you should keep an eye out for it. One of the other things we should do that we always do is hit up the questions. And there was a good question about the WRX, actually. So we'll start with Taylor from Wisconsin, where he says he realizes the WRX is a driver's car, but do you feel there's any chance that Subaru releases the 2015 WRX with the option of an auto transmission?
No.
I thought
Don't
you could
put
get
the a, ideas in their head.
I thought you could get a WRX like the previous WRX with an auto.
No, I checked today just to make sure. It was 5-speed or 6-speed manual.
Oh. All right. Well, somebody actually commented that Subaru already announced at their dealer meeting that it will be 50-50 production with an automatic.
Ouch. Boo. Yeah. Actually, that makes sense because then they'll actually sell them.
Yeah. And, you know, it might be like a CVT, too. Wouldn't that be fun?
Ugh.
You know, CVTs like power.
Yeah.
Nobody likes CVTs.
And then Chris in Michigan says, why is it that the 2015 WRX is so darn ugly?
I don't think it is.
I think they've always been ugly. Like, that's their thing.
I mean, I can see why someone would say, I can always see why someone would say a car is ugly that I don't think is ugly. Like, I've liked the Panamera from the very beginning, admitting that it's kind of ugly. So I'm the wrong person to answer this question, clearly.
Well, I mean, ugly versus not ugly is such a subjective thing. It's like in the eye of the beholder, right? So.
Yeah, I always get surprised. I'll think a car is beautiful, and then someone will be like, that thing is disgusting. And like, you can't even argue something like that. It's like politics.
I just step back and be like, you're disgusting.
I think the only car where it seems like everybody came together on like, no, that car is very pretty is the Audi A7. That's it.
Yeah, the A7 is attractive, but in person it's not as attractive as it is in pictures. That's
oh my goodness.
You're just a
Debbie Downer.
I'm not saying it's not a good looking car. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't kick it out of the driveway. But it's you know, in pictures I expected to see it in person and be like, OMGZZZZ to myself, but it didn't really work that way. And yes,
well, Tesla Model S, there's a good looking car.
That is a good looking car.
I'd rather have a A7.
Than a Tesla Model S?
Yes.
Interesting.
RS7 even, if I'm allowed to go there.
All right, yeah. Sure.
Elon can take all his money.
It's the Silicon Valley Camry.
There's a lot of Model S's out here.
Yeah, yeah. I see a few. There's one that I see nearly every day. But, you know, we don't have the tech entrepreneurs that must have the latest thing like you guys do out there.
Well, in Orange County, it's you know, all these fairly – I think they said that the wealthy people who buy them don't even really care about the green factor. They just kind of want it because it's the hot car.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Mitsubishi will make something.
Yeah.
that becomes the hot car.
If they make Starion, I'll be all over that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would be. Yeah, as long as it doesn't have that 2.6 liter MCA jet engine thing with the silly jet valve that, yeah. Ever so much fun. All right, so here's another one. What do you consider to be the most egregious examples of a car maker introducing a new model that was worse than the model it replaced?
The Mitsubishi Mirage.
No, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be pretty, I will just say every current BMW is worse than the model that it replaced. And he actually points that out.
I'm usually actually pretty hard on BMW. And when we do the Hooniverse podcast, I'm kind of pretty negative against BMW because of where they came from and where they are now. It's just unbelievable. It's like they and Mercedes swapped places, and that's insane. And I love Mercedes, but BMW is just on a weird like vision quest that no one else understands.
What a crappy movie to mention. Mercedes has always been Mercedes. They are still Mercedes.
Yeah.
BMW seems really confused lately. They seem like they're creating these cars that have lots of stuff, and they're forgetting. I mean, I guess they're probably selling a bunch of them, but
well, the other thing is though, they're making these niche markets or segments that no one's asking for. You know, like no one wants a 3 Series GT. No one. Get an X3 or a 3 Series wagon, because both of them do that. No one wants a 3 Series GT. And if they do, they're either on drugs or they're lying or they work for BMW.
Or they got a really good deal.
Or they got a really good deal.
Because I wouldn't mind a 3 Series GT for really, really short money.
No, you are a crazy person.
No, that's not true, actually. That thing's really ugly.
Right.
Let me forget.
It's hideous.
Forget I said that.
It's better than the X6.
If they just bring, because they are bringing the, what is it, the 328D or 320D diesel wagon.
Touring, yeah.
Yeah, to the, and that's, I mean, that's something you get excited about. And
see,
and,
if you
really
and,
need a crossover, get the X3.
Yeah.
Even though no one really needs a crossover.
I honestly, BMW to me is confused. Maybe they're just chasing sales. So,
and I see in that question, the person Russ Wood said their other example was G37 and Q50. And I don't think the Q50 is bad.
It's not as good as the G.
I think it's evolved. It's no longer the G, you know, regardless of the name. It's just not the G anymore. I feel like it's gotten more luxurious, to be honest.
It has, but it hasn't gotten better in terms of performance.
Which they couldn't afford it not to do, because you got the ATS, and going back to the Lexus IS, if these cars are getting better, and then Infiniti kind of steps away from that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, though, I mean, I think we are the enthusiast press, and therefore we are mostly irrelevant. These car makers are probably – Infiniti is probably going to sell more of the Q50s the way they've got it set up now than they did of the Gs, because they have the stuff that people want. Wow.
You heard
Your
that?
Dog does not agree with me.
No, they just got in a fight.
Awesome. You know, they've got the features that people want and the configurations that people want versus like the G37, which was a more pure driver's car. But not everybody really wants that. And, you know, most of the people look at it and they're like, yeah, the back seat is tiny and the interior materials aren't as good. And what do you mean I can't get, you know, whatever is the flavor of the month feature? So,
well, that's why they're going to be selling G's and Q's side by side until they get it figured out.
Yeah. So my money would definitely be on the G, because that's a better car in a lot of respects. So, all right. So here's one where we can play a little bit with somebody else's money. Recently my company went public and I have $30,000 total to blow on something fun. Searched a local used car marketplace in the greater Boston area. This is not me. I don't know this guy. And test drove a few cars. He wants to buy all of them, but can only afford one. Likes cars with character and somewhat rare, like a 2002 E39 M5, 2007 Z4 3.0 SI, 2007 S2000, 2013 MX5, that one's new, and a 2002 Z3M with the S54.
Don't get the 2013 MX5. Wait for the next one. I mean, if you really want a new car, because I'm sure that's going to be awesome. Based on the list he showed me, I mean, I'm just going with my personal gut. Personally, I've always wanted an E39 M5. And if you can get one with under 50,000 miles, that one, if you take care of it, could also be a collector down the road.
That's true. I feel like maintenance and upkeep of an E39, let alone an E39 M5, not insignificant.
Sure.
I'd go with the S2000.
I'm like
on.
The
I'm
only
up the
journalist
price of a
on the planet
C5Z06 right now.
Who doesn't love that? Ooh, you know, well, C5Z06, you're definitely gonna. You can find that for between 12 and 20.
Yeah,
and it's gonna smoke that, every car on the list.
And you'll find one with like 10,000 miles on it that some dude, you know, in his 50s bought and toddled around in for a while.
And they run, I think stock, they run 12s in the quarter mile, which is bananas. Yeah. We had a conversation recently on Hooniverse about that being probably the best performance buy you can get right now if you include used cars.
I bet you could probably get a C6 for under 30.
Might be able to, actually.
And I like the C6 better because it's not as flabby looking.
No, exterior-wise, it's a much prettier car.
All right, so here's one for us with kids. Alex from Connecticut says he and his wife have been eyeing the Kia Sportage for months, and he keeps telling her to wait until the next model year. as there are some nice updates. But when on earth is Kia going to release the 2014 Sportage? Also, he's looking at getting a Wrangler for the winters up here in New England, and also some mudding during the weekend. What's the best model to get? He's got a wife and a four-year-old. Yeah, Wrangler is a commuter car. Even in the winter, like, it's awesome when it snows. It's kind of crappy any other time because it's a Wrangler.
If he doesn't care about driving refinement or fuel economy, I say stop waiting for the Kia and just get the Wrangler Unlimited and call it a day.
What were you going to say, Jeff?
I was just going to say even some of the best 4x4s don't always handle the snow best.
That's
all about the driver.
That's true. So in that case, get yourself a Patriot, and you'll be all set.
Oh, God. Get yourself a CTSV wagon and some Blizzaks, and have a go.
You know, I would have a good old time in the snow with a CTS wagon with some Blizzaks. You know, if you want the Sportage, you know, if you can handle the 2013, you should go drive it and see how you like it, and see what the price differential is between a 13 and a 14, because you could probably save a whole lot of money and not give up much. Unless you really want whatever upgrades they're making. I don't know what the upgrades are off the top of my head. I'm assuming it's probably, you know, like something to do with the UVO system and all that.
Which actually is a pretty good upgrade. If 14 has it and 13 doesn't, and I don't know if that's the case, but if it is, UVO is pretty cool, especially if it's going to be a daily driver.
Yeah, and I'm sure they both have UVO in some way, but probably like a newer version. So bigger screen. Everybody goes with a bigger screen now. So
yeah.
You want the bigger screen because it's a bigger screen. So, all right. I think we have successfully run the clock out on another Autoblog podcast. Your dogs seem to be pretty antsy there, Jeff. So,
I'm trying to kick them, but I'm not reaching them. And I'm not really trying to kick them. I'm trying to love tap them.
You need a pillow so you can smother them.
This podcast was brought to you by the ASPCA.
I kid. I have a cat that I give pills to every day. So when I'm consistent about it, clearly, if you know my little story. So I love animals.
And half of my Facebook and Instagram feed are my dogs. So
yeah. So there you go. Jeff Glucker from Hooniverse.com. Thank you for coming on the podcast and spending some time with us. We are at Autoblog Podcast. We are also on iTunes. We have an iHeartRadio channel. You can toss us your feedback at podcast@autoblog.com. And we will see you next week. We are brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. So no matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. So I'm Dan Roth. I've got the Jeffs tonight. So thank you, gentlemen. And we will see you next week.
Good night.